Spirit Blade Underground, episode 362. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 362.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. By the way, the new website is up and running at spiritblade.com. Now, earlier this week, I had tried to get it so that the .net would also now forward to .com. Because up to this point, if you put in .com, you go to the old .net website. And I wanted to reverse that. Well, I screwed something up. And so for a while, you couldn't access the old .net website if you put in spiritblade.net, which also meant that anything associated with spiritblade.net as a URL... I didn't have access to. So you might have had problems with the podcast or accessing who knows what else, the blog maybe. But that should all be fixed now and up and running again. Eventually, we will set it up so that spiritblade.net, when you type that in, will forward to the new site, spiritblade.com. For now, until we get all our ducks in a row, there are actually two websites existing for Spirit Blade Productions. There's the old one at spiritblade.net, which, you know, if someone places an order there or something like that, I mean, I'm still, as long as it's online, I'm still going to be fully interacting, you know, with that content. And so if you place an order there, it will be fulfilled, you know, an order for an audio drama. But at the same time, you can also place an order at spiritblade.com, and all that stuff is good to go as well. So, and it's actually a much nicer looking site. It doesn't autoplay any trailers. It's just much better, more streamlined and focused. I may do like a tour of the website on the YouTube channel in the future. I don't know. I just haven't been able to make that a priority right now. But if you want to go check out spiritblade.com and let me know if you have any questions or feedback that you'd like to share, I'd be very interested in that. Okay, that's it. Okay, on the show today. If you are, like, jonesing for Ant-Man, well, we are the first podcast, I think, probably in the world with a review for Ant-Boy, which Ken from Honolulu brings us today. And then after that, Matt McKinney comes back with some more Trek talk. This time the subject is Voyager as it should have been. I think you guys are going to enjoy both of those things that we got lined up today. Plus a look at the question, what's so bad about sex, nudity, and fantasies in entertainment? All right, lots of stuff. Let's get to it.
Every day, somewhere in the world, a movie is slipping through the cracks. Every year, hundreds are lost and forgotten. But one man refuses to let them fall into darkness. One man risks everything to bring them back into the light. That man is Ken from Honolulu.
Hello, this is Ken from Honolulu with a movie review. This review contains spoilers. The movie is Ant-Boy, made in 2013. For a list of who directed it and who acted in it, you need to go to IMDb to see, because this film was made in Denmark, and the names for me are almost unpronounceable. I would just mash it up so badly you couldn't understand it. Synopsis. A 12-year-old Pele is bitten by an ant and develops superpowers. Aided by a comic book nerd, Wilhelm, Pele creates a secret identity as superhero Ant Boy. When the supervillain, the Flea, enters the scene, and boy must step up to the challenge. Review. I give this a quality score of 8 and a relevant score of 4. Quality score of 8 is because it is well acted, even though they are almost all kids doing the acting. The only adults basically is the flea, which is an adult male, and Ant Boy's parents, who don't show up much in the film. And when they do, they're clueless caricatures of adult parents and caregivers. This movie is a 12-year-old version, a 12-year-old's version of Spider-Man. It basically follows the same lines, which is kind of fun. This is a film that was made in Denmark, so they're speaking Danish. However, it's dubbed in English. So those who are used to watching kung fu films and Chinese films where the mouth does not match the words, this film would feel very familiar. The CG in this film is very, very minimal. But the practical effects, there's a lot of them. And they're actually very good. It's a very good film to watch. It's, you can plop the kids down in front of it and have no problem. There's anywhere over the age of probably 12, maybe 10, they really wouldn't enjoy it because it is a kids film. It is about kids. It is for kids. So it's just kind of one of those things where if you're an adult and you're watching it just for complete entertainment value. You'll see Spider-Man all through it. They do make some funny type of jokes, like when he has to urinate. That's kind of funny. And one thing that's interesting is in American films, if you're a preteen or a teenager boy, you're not supposed to know how to sew or like sewing. His sidekick is actually very good at it, and they don't make any kind of embarrassing thing about it. He's got his sewing machine right in his room. They do it right there, and they work on the designs together. So that part was kind of interesting to me, you know, to show that you don't have to be embarrassed when you're good at something and you enjoy it, what you're doing. The film does take some interesting turns as far as a 12-year-old romantic turn can take that is kind of unexpected. Well, I found kind of unexpected. Of course, there is no profanity. There is no sex. The violence is very, very minimal. So this is a movie that you can plop your kid down in front of and just let them watch and never have to worry about it. As I said, probably anybody under 12 would like it. Anything over that, and it's just kind of hokey. But it is a good film. It is well made, and it is well acted. Thank you for listening to my review. This is Ken from Honolulu. Aloha.
I want to remind you guys to check out the other podcasts in the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, and the Untold podcast. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Captain France into Ensign McKinley.
Sir, that's Ensign McKinney.
You know what? I don't need to know the details. You know, funny thing, I cannot find a single bathroom on this ship. It's a complete oversight. There's not one toilet, I don't think, anywhere. So, I left a little something in my ready room. It'd be great if you could clean it up when you get a chance.
Yes, sir. I'll find someone beneath me in the chain of command, and they'll be up there to fix that as soon as possible, sir. Hello again. This is Matt McKinney. And if you're disappointed, I am very sorry. But I'm disappointed, too. Not in you, but in Voyager. How's that for a segue? Today I'm not going to talk about the series of Voyager as we got it, but rather Voyager
as he should have been.
The first two series of Star Treks were very basic. The premise could be said in the beginning of the show, and it was...
to explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Simple enough. Deep Space Nine basically took the world building of those two shows and said, what happens if we stay put and see the consequences of our actions? Where we get character growth and things that actually make a difference. Also, we explored a different corner of the galaxy we'd never been to. And in Voyager, the entire premise of the show is that the ship is lost in a different corner of the galaxy that we've never seen before. A whole new series of brand new aliens and concepts. And not only that, but we've never had a situation like this. A starship abandoned far away from any government. Star Trek has always been about the official governmental starships. It's never been about criminals or people isolated. Now you got a hint of both. Something we don't really get a whole lot of. Usually you get either Star Trek or Firefly. Voyager could have been like a melding of the two. Instead, what we got was more of the Next Generation, but not nearly as good. If you've listened to Peter's Farscape Shawarma, you probably get an idea that he really loves that show. Not surprising. What you may not realize is the timing of the show. Farscape premiered in the last few seasons of Voyager, and I am sure that Voyager heavily influenced Farscape's creation. However, I'm afraid that they most likely did most of their influencing by negative example. In other words, Farscape learned what not to do by seeing it fail on Voyager. Online reviewer SF Debris has made this exact same point with this exact same clip, but Q really sums up Voyager very well when he says,
"He drifted through much of his career with no plan or agenda, going from one assignment to the next, never seizing the opportunities that presented themselves. He learned to play it safe."
That's the crux of Voyager right there. They never took a chance. They never tried anything really new. If Voyager had been willing to try a few things differently, it could have been an amazing show, possibly the best Star Trek of all. At least something different. And here's a few ideas that, in my opinion, would have made Voyager a much stronger show. What if instead of being the captain of Voyager from the very beginning, Janeway was the only surviving command-level officer and so had to take over a ship, never having commanded before? They do say early on that Voyager is Janeway's first command, but then they act like every decision she makes is the right decision. They never take a chance. They never let Janeway be wrong. And I think this is largely because Janeway was a woman, and the show creators really underestimated their audience, figured they wouldn't give a woman a chance unless she was always right. This really backfired because I think people got sick of Janeway always being right in an artificial way. What if the Maquis never wore Starfleet uniforms? What if they were always in casual gear, except for the occasional Maquis who decided to, quote-unquote, go Starfleet? What if that was one of the many sources of, to use a word Gene Roddenberry never wanted to use, conflict among the crew? Maybe some of the Starfleet crewmen don't like the idea that they're jumping through hoops that the Maquis crew don't have to jump through. They don't have to keep all the many nitpicky protocols that the Starfleet crew would have to do. What if Chakotay, who used to be a Starfleet captain and was kind of revered, had been a living legend, almost on the level of Kirk and Picard, just that we'd never seen before? Perhaps people on both crews would start to wonder whether Chakotay was actually the best man for the job of first officer, or whether he was being held down because he was actually the best man for the job of captain. You wouldn't have to show that Janeway was incompetent, just show her earning her competence. Show her live up to what we claim that she always is.
Who is she to be making these decisions for all of us?
She's the captain.
And here's a crazy thought. What if Tom Paris and Chakotay, who all throughout the entire pilot episode seemed to loathe one another and distrust one another, kept doing that? What if there were actual enmities on the ship for a long time? Deep Space Nine did it, and it worked. The main problem was Rick Berman, the guy who took over for Gene Roddenberry after he passed away. And really, the problem is more Gene Roddenberry, because Rick Berman was just continuing the job that Gene Roddenberry has given him. Roddenberry's vision of Star Trek was, frankly, not a very good one for drama. It was that everyone has gotten all their problems out of their system, no one fights amongst each other, the only villains are ever among aliens. This is stupid and naive, and most importantly, it's bad drama. Here's something Farscape did very well that I wish Voyager had at least tried to do. What if your guest stars actually stayed on for several episodes? What if you had a secondary and even tertiary cast that was consistent and regular, instead of once in a while you see a crewman who is once in the background of this other episode? I think the Voyager got more new crewmen during its 7-year run than the USS Enterprise did, and it was in the middle of its own government. Here's an interesting notion. There was a season 1 episode, one of their better ones in that season, where it turns out one of the crew was actually a Cardassian who had been surgically altered and was a spy for an enemy government. This same crewman turned out to be a traitor who was working with aliens here in the Delta Quadrant and ended up joining them and leaving Voyager. Part of the crux of that episode was a question of whether she was the traitor or one of the Starfleet crew, specifically one of the crew that one of the Maquis crew had supplanted in the job. And of course, it turned out that it was the alien traitor and everything was wrapped up nicely and we have one enemy amongst us. But here's a crazy thought. What if it was actually the Starfleet crewman and the spy was on our side still? Wouldn't that be an interesting thing in the future? To find out someone who is actually your native enemy, who had been against you all throughout, but now is on your side because of circumstances? I hate to sound like a broken record, but Deep Space Nine did that. They had Garak, the Cardassian spy. And he was one of the best parts of an excellent show. Seska could have been Voyager's version of Garak. She wouldn't have been a clone of the character, but just a similar situation where you have an alien who, in another situation, would be an enemy, but now she's your ally by necessity. You get to learn new things about Cardassian culture and the way they do things. You get to bounce things off a new character. You have this thing called drama. I wish they had tried it more often. There was another episode where we had an alien come on the ship who turned out by the end of the episode to betray them all. But he was a likable and affable alien who had a unique power. His race could just naturally understand any language after hearing just a few words, sort of a living universal translator race, if you will. That's an interesting idea. Star Trek has never done that. So, what do? Did they introduce him several episodes earlier, let us get to know and like him, have him be the savior in one episode and just in the background with a subplot here or there, and then finally turn on the crew, shocking and dismaying us all? No. He appears, spends half the episode being a friend, and then turns on us. Well, guess what? You didn't surprise anyone who watches the show, because that's what all of the new guest characters do. The thing is, Star Trek Next Generation, and even Deep Space Nine really couldn't get away with having your regular guest cast member for several episodes. Well, Deep Space Nine did occasionally, but for the most part they'd fall in the background. Although, again, that's all you really need to do here. It's not like you had to have every episode be about the new alien. This is one part where Farscape excels far and above Star Trek, and I'm sad to say that, but it's true. Probably best exemplified was Stark, who would appear, go away, come back. Of course, I think sometimes they did it so quickly that you weren't even sure if he was back on the ship or not, or if they just got the episodes out of order. But still, I'd rather have that error than the error Voyager kept making, which was, Q, what is it?
He learned to play it safe.
Yeah. Another problem Voyager had is that, for all their attempts to try to go into a new area of space and discover new aliens, they kept wanting to bring back classic Star Trek things. And I get on one hand why they would do that. They want to please their fan base. You don't want to spend all your time getting to know new aliens. You want to have Klingons and Romulans and Borg. And once in a while, that's okay. But by the end of Voyager's run, we've run into about 5 or 6 different pieces of ancient Earth history. There are 2 completely separate and independent situations in which they run across Klingons or Klingon-related materials in the Delta Quadrant, where there are no Klingons. They ran into some Ferengi, although to their credit, at least the Ferengi were shown as going to the Delta Quadrant in a Next Generation episode, sort of making that episode a sequel to this one. Wasn't that great of an episode, but at least they set up why it was there. But all in all, they were just way too quick to fall back on, oh, here's something from Earth, let's go there. For the record, after recording this, I went back and actually counted the episodes, and there were 13 episodes out of 168 that actually they stumbled across something by random chance from somewhere in the Alpha Quadrant. This wasn't when someone hunted them down, this wasn't when they brought something with them that got out of control. 13 times, the Voyager crew just stumbled across something by accident that had been from the Alpha Quadrant.
Never tell me the odds.
Voyager should have been like the Odyssey of Star Trek. It should have been people caught off guard, having strange adventures on their way home. But instead, what it was, again, just another Next Generation, only without the good characters. And then when Voyager did get a good character in the form of Seven of Nine, along with the Doctor, they just let them run the entire show. Neelix, Anson Kim, Chakotay, Tuvok, Tom Paris, B'Elanna, they all got a little bit of character development over the 7 years, but for a 7-year run, it's shocking how little most people change in that show. Because, Q?
He learned to play it safe.
And playing it safe is never a good thing if you're trying to tell a story. Voyager, you weren't a bad show. You certainly weren't Enterprise bad. But because you were so afraid to take chances, because you tried to play it safe and give people everything they wanted and not what you thought they needed, well, I think John Crichton said it best when he said,
"You can be more."
Yeah, you really could have.
Well, if you want to help make sure that Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing or do more of it both faster and better, you're invited to make a donation of any amount, anytime, or become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. For more info, you can check out spiritblade.net/donate. You're also invited, of course, to support us by purchasing a download of one of our original sci-fi or fantasy audio dramas. For more information, visit spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth. That which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not
not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Today, I want to put on the table the question, what's so bad about sex, nudity, and fantasies that come from entertainment? Sex sells. Everyone knows it. Authors, film producers, comic book artists, and game developers all know that images, even mental images, of attractive, usually female bodies will attract people to whatever content is being created. Now, it may not involve nudity or be defined as pornography, but it's still content created to take advantage of and stimulate sexual lust to make the product attractive. And in the privacy of our homes, we can fixate on this kind of content, and in the case of games, even manipulate and interact with it. So we might ask the question, well, who is it? I mean, really, who's it harming if we enjoy this kind of content? Why would God want for us to deprive ourselves of this private pleasure? Does the Bible really say anything useful as we think about this kind of stuff? Well, all right, let me first say that I'm not bringing this topic up as a guy who has figured it all out and mastered this area of life. I am an inconsistent mess of a person, and if you could see my heart, then you'd be disgusted. So I'm sharing this as a guy who needs repeated daily rescue from my selfishness and who needs the relentless love and forgiveness that Jesus tirelessly offers. My aim here is to refresh my mind on what the Bible says, since it's been a while that I've visited this topic on the podcast, and this is the first time that I've visited it on the channel, on the YouTube channel. So my aim is to refresh my mind on what the Bible says that can be helpful in this area, and I'm inviting you to be a part of that with me. Okay, and once again, forgive me. When I do these kinds of segments, I tend to, if you're watching the video, you'll notice that I'm going to be reading quite a lot because I like to try and choose my words more carefully, you know, because I think this stuff matters more than, you know, whatever stupid stuff I have to say about some movie or video game. So forgive me as you notice that I'm reading if you're watching the video. But let's get the basics out of the way first. Matthew 5:28. Jesus says, "But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Now, this comes in the middle of Jesus' teaching on the heart and how God doesn't just care about, he doesn't just care about our actions. He cares about our thoughts. He doesn't just want like our behavior patterns to change. He wants to change who we naturally are in our inmost truest being. He wants us to become increasingly better at loving and valuing other people. And desiring a person only for their body devalues them. Jesus says at another point, and it's not in my notes, so I can't tell you where. Somebody can figure this out and put it in the notes, or if I remember, I'll put it later. But that all the law and commandments spring out of this idea of loving each other, you know, as if the law and commandments are just kind of like how that works itself out. But really, the law is motivated, ultimately, all of it is about loving God and loving others. And so that's what this teaching is about, too, when he says that if you look at a woman with lustful intent in your heart, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. And now let's say that we wanted to try and squirm our way out of this one, okay? Because I know that when I'm dealing with a command from Scripture that I don't like, then I have a tendency to want to try and say, okay, well, is there a way that I could interpret this so that I can still do what I want to do? I think that's just kind of our natural tendency. It's certainly a remnant of my sin nature that's left over that I deal with all the time. So we could, if we wanted to squirm our way out of this one, we could get super literal and say Matthew 5:28 doesn't apply to images that aren't really women, you know, such as artistic representations in comics or video games. And, you know, based on that logic, you could argue that pornography then is really just a collection of pixels that we lust after and not an actual woman, right? But this just leads down an absurd rabbit hole where we can start claiming that in looking at a woman woman in the room with us, we are actually not looking at a woman, but simply an organization of colors being reflected off her clothes and body. But I don't think any scholar of the New Testament time period will tell you that Jesus would have had that kind of interpretation in mind. He spoke in normal language for the normal people of the day, not in language intended for review in a future scientific journal. Even so, I'd argue that the heart of this command, as I said before, is about loving and valuing others, and fixating on someone's physical form and seeing it as a mere tool for our or object for our gratification, that's selfish rather than selfless, the selfless love that that we're meant to have. Because of this, I don't see how one could argue that nudity and sexualized images of women do not involve varying yet significant risk of temptation to sin for most, if not all, men. Now, people will have various degrees of sensitivity and triggers for temptation. We shouldn't assume that others have the same degree of strength or weakness against a given trigger or temptation. It's largely something that can only be monitored on a personal, individual basis. Of course, this also makes it really easy for each of us to simply put up a smokescreen and defend our image before others, you know, saying, oh yeah, well that kind of thing isn't a problem for me, and not admitting that something we're engaging in is a problem for us, is causing us to sin. Or, you know, we can also just not really probe deeply in, you know, in our most private moments and really ask ourselves the hard questions. You know, when we're dealing with sin that is largely self-monitored, there's a lot that we can just choose to get away with. And, you know, we can play that game for as long as we want, but the long-term effects of engaging in sexual sin, even briefly, and even though it may be a purely secret mental activity, it will be felt by those around us, especially our spouses, even our future spouses. In her article titled "The Impact of Pornography on Marital Sex," Dr. Julie Slattery says, "In many marriages, the husband isn't interested in sex with his wife because he has been programmed to respond to a much higher level of erotic stimulation." She cites a study on pornography addiction which revealed that with the passage of time, the addicted person required rougher, more explicit, more deviant, and kinky kinds of sexual material to get their highs and sexual turn-ons. She goes on to say that pornography, quote, allows a man to have sex on his terms. Porn is always available, never too busy, and always inviting. It doesn't criticize, doesn't require foreplay or patience, isn't dependent on feeling close, and never has a headache. When a guy is engaged in this type of sexual outlet, she says, his sexuality becomes centered on his immediate needs and demands. The prospect of working through the messy issues of marital intimacy is pretty unattractive. And I think that those ideas, you know, although there may be less of an impact when we're talking about stuff that isn't specifically pornography, but that's just like really sexualized in some way, I think that we're going to see these same kinds of patterns, maybe not as strongly, but I certainly think that we can apply what this study says about the effects of pornography to, you know, the potential effects of sexualized media that we take in. Now, I can say from experience that although the material was not what we would define as pornography, increased exposure to sexualized content has made me a more selfish, frustrated, and unsatisfied husband. And decreasing or removing those kinds of experiences from my life has greatly improved stuff. And I've got a wife to think about, so I can't be more specific than that. The bottom line, though, is sexualized content equals sexual frustration and dissatisfaction. That's what we're setting ourselves up for. Even engaging in that content before marriage, you know, maybe you're saying, oh, I'm not married yet, so I can do this stuff now, engage in whatever I want, and I'll just quit. Once I say I do, you're still going to be left, speaking from experience, you're still going to be left with images and ideas that will hurt your experiences with your spouse. And those are just the selfish reasons to avoid sexual temptation triggers. The better reasons are found in Scripture. Mark 12, verses 30 and 31 says, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your..." And this is Jesus responding to the question, what's the most important, greatest commandment? And he says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength." And then he adds, just as kind of a supplement to that, the second is this: "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." There is no other commandment greater than these. So as I and as I said, there's another part of scripture that, which again, I don't recall. It's not in my notes, where he says that, you know, all the, I believe he says all the law and the prophets spring out of this idea of love, this command of loving your neighbor as yourself. The Greek word used for love here and elsewhere in the New Testament is defined by a selfless regard for others and what's best for them. Engaging privately and mentally in lust is not victimless. Avoiding sexual temptation triggers is part of loving others. Why? Because it helps keep us from viewing others as a means to our gratification. And getting, you know, engaged in sexualized content, the more sensitive you are to it, the more sexualized it is, the more it's going to feed into the mentality of seeing others as a means to our gratification. We can't see people as mere sex objects if we are choosing to value them the way that we want to be valued. So I think that's what we take from this, loving others as we love ourselves. Now, this may be a controversial statement, but I believe that anyone who wants to be appreciated only for their body and their ability to sexually gratify someone else, because maybe you're saying, you know, well, that's the only way I really want to be valued. You know, as I just want to be valued for my body and my ability to give other people sexual pleasure, you know. I truly believe that anybody who wants to be appreciated only for their body and their ability to sexually gratify someone else is emotionally and mentally unhealthy in some way. I don't believe that anyone in their right mind, as we say, wants to be unloved for who they are and only desired for their body. Now, while sexualized entertainment should certainly be a big red flag for us, we should take note of anything that contributes to having that objectifying mentality and stay away from it. Now, speaking for myself, I do fine with self-deprecating sexual humor that acknowledges some of the awkward elements that can be found in the sexual experience. I mean, like the kind of sexual references you would get on a comedy like Everybody Loves Raymond, if you've seen that show. But I've noticed that the more I'm exposed to most types of what I would call like macho locker room sexual humor, the more I tend to think of my wife as being intended to satisfy me, and the more I think of her as falling short in that department, and the more frustrated I become. And of course, I've also found this pattern to be true the more exposed I am to movies and photos with sexualized portrayals of women. The same principle can and I think should be applied to other things in life that may lead us into a selfish mentality that objectifies or creates unfair expectations of others. Since many women are not nearly as, and you know, I'm talking in generalizations. I know that that some of the stuff I'm saying about men may apply to women, and some of the stuff I'm saying about women may apply to men. But anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. Since many women are not nearly as visually oriented as men when it comes to sex, I asked my wife, you know, what things in entertainment she found could put her in a mindset that would objectify me or that would make, you know, encourage her or, you know, to see me as like just a person that's here to gratify her. She pointed to stories in which, you know, fiction, you know, entertainment, books, movies, whatever. And you find this in, you know, this can be video games too, especially with, you know, games like Mass Effect, the games produced by BioWare, where romance quest lines and subplots are becoming more and more common, and character models are becoming more and more, I don't want to say realistic, but I mean, they can do, they have a lot more control over the shape and how they create and make those characters look now than they did years ago. Anyway, my wife pointed to stories in which a man is an idealized romantic who frequently or cleverly surprises his lady with unique and creative expressions of affection. And my wife isn't alone in this. Many women can find themselves fixating on an ideal type of man presented in fiction who devotedly serves their every whim or who has some other appealing characteristic that really connects with them. And these same women then become frustrated when the man in their life doesn't match up to the fiction. So whether your heart flutters for one of the Avengers or that romance quest line in Mass Effect is a big motivator for playing, geeks have plenty of reasons to ask ourselves some hard questions, some thoughtful questions about this stuff. Maybe we find it easy to identify and divorce ourselves from sexual or romantic content that is obviously bad for us. But I think another test worth taking is asking ourselves what we expect from a present or future girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse, and where we picked up those expectations. And I think there a red flag should go off. We say, you know, the models that I've seen that I'm basing my expectations off of, I've picked up from movies, I've picked up from books, I've picked up from fiction or entertainment in some form. I think that ought to be a red flag for us. Now, make no mistake, doing what we can to increase our physical appeal for our present or future spouse, that's a good thing. Being creatively romantic and serving our spouse, that's a good thing. The Bible itself presents physical and relational enjoyment of our spouse as an ideal in the Song of Solomon. But we sin when we begin feeling entitled to the ideal and seeing the opposite sex as a means of our gratification. So if you start getting into that kind of like frustrated, like entitled mentality of why isn't my spouse this? Why doesn't she look like this? Or why doesn't she do this? Or something like that. I think those are red flags. And at that time, we ought to figure out, okay, what's going on in the content that I'm taking in that's giving me these kinds of expectations? And again, I think that you want to even be asking those questions of your expectations, your ideas of what a future marriage would be like if you're not married yet. And you're kind of just thinking about what marriage, what sex will be like, what my wife will be into or whatever, you know. Ponder for a moment, where are you getting those ideas? And so I think we ought to guard ourselves against content that puts our minds in the wrong place, puts our minds in that kind of selfish, objectifying mode. Now, maybe as you think about this, breaking out of those habits, you think about your own habits, the stuff that you're kind of engaging in, and you're like, oh man, yeah, there's some stuff that's probably feeding into some bad ideas and thinking on my part. So, and maybe the idea of breaking out of those habits is so monumental a task, and that you would have to give up other things connected to it, you know, that you enjoy so much. It would just really be hard. Maybe it's just like, oh, it's a waste of time. I can't do it. I can't do it. But people rarely change overnight, and yet we can choose to take some small step in a better direction today. Even if we screw it all up again tomorrow, we can still choose in the moment, you know, I'm gonna pack away this video game and just make it a little bit more of a pain to get to the next time I feel like playing it, because maybe that hesitation will lead me to say, I'll do something else. That's a pain to get at. So there's some little thing that we can do that maybe wouldn't be as extreme as throwing something away. Maybe we just can't bring ourselves to do that, but maybe there's something else we can do in this moment to find something else to do, or maybe make that thing a little less accessible. There's something that we can put our minds to work to figure out that we can do today that will leave us better off, and we'll just have more and more of those days. We might screw it up for the next 3 months after we make the right choice today. But that's, we're still on a better path than we were before. And I think in thinking about that, you mean like, seriously, Pater, 3 months of screwing up and that you call that a better path? I think it's vital to remember the tireless, relentless love and forgiveness of Jesus, who doesn't love us any less for our unceasing failures. He is not like shocked and surprised. Oh boy, man, I'm just getting sick and tired of this person. They tried, but they kind of suck, you know, the 3 months, you know, and it's all down the toilet again. Jesus is not surprised. He knows the end from the beginning. And when we put our trust in him to forgive us and to let his righteousness be put on our record, then he washes our record clean. He replaces it with his own. He makes every moment a fresh one in which we can choose, at least in that one instance, to trust God enough to do life his way. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind that you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we got to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Some quick announcements. I'm still interested in some help with the Summer of Free blog site that I'd like to set up this summer to kind of make it really easy to archive and sift through, you know, all the installments of Summer Free that we've had in the past and find that information throughout the year and then update it each summer as we do the Summer of Free. So I just need someone to help with some copying and pasting is what it's going to amount to. So if you'd be willing and interested in helping me out with that, you can email me at paeter@spiritblade.net. I did say that I was going to talk more about the Agape Geek Out in June this week and promote that more and explain it more. I actually explained it pretty much, all of it, last time, so there's not a whole lot more to say, but I also didn't have time to really do prep and kind of get the page up that to refer you guys to, so I am going to try to make that a priority just because it's time-sensitive coming up here soon. To talk about that next week on the show, and probably put something also on Christian Geek Central. But in the meantime, you can just be looking at your calendar in June and look for like a day where you can have some people over to kind of geek out and have fun, and also just give them, everyone who comes, an opportunity to donate a few bucks to I think it's going to be Compassion International, but I'll let you guys know for sure what I'm hoping we can all kind of pool our efforts toward donating to. So anyway, more on that next week, but maybe just look at your calendars for now and look for a time that you could invite some, you know, a weekend or a date or time, whatever you got to do. Now I'm just blabbing. Okay. I also want your summer of free suggestions. This summer, just because of all the other things, because, you know, I got the Agape Geek Out that I'm planning, and I'm up to my eyeballs and mixing for Spirit Blade: World of Shadows. I just don't think, the same was true last summer. But I just don't think I'm going to have time to do that. I haven't had time. By this time, usually each year, I've already done most of my research for what my summer free segments are going to be. I've done nothing. And that's for two reasons. One, because I would really like to get your suggestions, for the podcast. And two, I think that my focus this year is, especially if I am not able to get help from somebody with setting up a summer of free blog site, I think the time that I would have spent doing research on that, I'll spend instead on getting that blog set up, and then also in creating YouTube videos of me kind of exploring summer of free options, you know, that we've had featured on the show in the past, so that we can start kind of celebrating the summer of free on the YouTube channel as well. And so I'll probably do some let's plays or trial and errors of free video games. Maybe I'll do some movie reviews of some free movies and entertainment that you can check out online, or you know, free games, you know, like board card game type stuff. So and if you want to help, as always, guys, if you want to help, if you want to be a part of the Christian Geek Central YouTube channel, creating content there, and then also kind of, you know, plugging your stuff, and maybe you have your own channel that you want to plug, I mean, that would be awesome to have you involved in, you know, it's really mostly me. There have been like maybe two or three videos on the YouTube channel that have not been me, but it's lots of me blabbing, and I'd love to get your submissions. You can send them to me at paeter@spiritblade.net, or to Matt McKinney. And crap, I don't have my notes on what his email address is. Hang on one second. You know, that's not going to happen. Okay. I don't have the info handy enough for me to dig that out. But anyway, yeah, at least you can email me for now, paeter@spiritblade.net. If you would like to add your voice to the Christian Geek Central YouTube channel or this podcast, or you have some thoughts on what you could add to the blog, any of that kind of stuff, I'd love to get your ideas and your involvement. Okay. Oh, yeah. And speaking of the YouTube channel, you can go check out my sex video. There now, my video about what I talked about today, the video version of that. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Oh, and before I forget, I was totally going to forget, but I do want to thank both Ken from Honolulu and Matt McKinney for their segments today. Great stuff, guys. Great stuff. Love the... man, where do you find that stuff, Ken? Where do you even find a movie like freaking Ant Boy? I have no idea. And... oh, Matt, your references to Farscape almost made me, like, tear up. Like, especially when you played that little clip of John Crichton. I was like, oh, my gosh. I felt like I was so validated in liking Farscape, which really I shouldn't feel. I shouldn't care. I shouldn't care, because my identity is not wrapped up in my geek hobbies, right? We should all say that together as a mantra. But anyway, it did feel good. Okay. All right, so stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll have a review of Mad Max Fury Road. So freaking excited. And then I'm also planning on getting back into the Book of Hebrews, if you were wondering about that. So till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff that's made just for you. Thanks so much, guys, for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Friends and with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right, just finished up Eat Me? No, Green Eyed Monster, sorry. Written by Ben Browder, who plays John Crichton. Yeah, this is a good episode. Very character-driven one, exploring relationships, and especially, you know, obviously in a major way, advancing the relationship between John and Aaron, and, you know, just kind of reminding us of their level of intimacy, you know, which by that I mean specifically emotional intimacy. That's where, you know, that's what really means something to Aaron, you know, because the other stuff is just recreating, right? And this is the first episode that just deals with, you know, one of the two Crichtons. And if I remember correctly, what we see going forward, for maybe a little while at least, is episodes that jump back and forth that are all about one Crichton and his surrounding cast or the other. I can only imagine, you know, people that were trying to get into the show at this point. There's, I think, probably from here on out, there's no good entry to this show, which at the time was part of what killed it. Because there just wasn't a convenient entry point. It wasn't like Star Trek, where you can basically watch the Next Generation episodes completely out of order, and there might be something every now and then that you would kind of like raise an eyebrow at and go, huh, what's that about? But I think for the most part, you'd be just fine. Whereas this, I mean, at this point, oh my gosh, you'd just be so lost. But that's what makes it, you know, so rewarding and enjoyable today. And it's something, of course, that we're really used to with all kinds of television now. And we almost expect it. So if you haven't seen this one in a while, this is the one where they're on Talon and they run into a Budong and they get swallowed by a Budong. They have to try and find their way out. And meanwhile, there's this major subplot where there's this video of Aaron and Crace recreating that John comes across. And of course, you learn at the end of the episode that Talon created that and that he seems to be developing, you know, this kind of vision for a family that involves Aaron and Crace as his parent figures, you know, and kind of takes John out of the picture. So that, I thought that was interesting to just, because we don't get a real strong sense of who Moya is as a character. Sorry, I think my video just kind of like cut out for a second there. Because a little notice came up, and I think that pauses my recording when that happens, so I apologize. Just backtrack a little bit. This is the episode where they get swallowed by a Budong, and they have to find their way out, and meanwhile there's this major subplot with Aaron and Crace, a video of them recreating, that you find out at the end Talon created because he's kind of envisioning this family wherein Crace and Aaron are his kind of parent figures, you know, and John really doesn't play a role in that. And so it's interesting because Moya, we don't really have a strong sense of her character other than she's kind of, you know, compassionate and loving to some degree. You know, she's this sweet kind of, you know, motherly figure, if anything. And here we get a sense of, I guess, Talon's youth, his naivete, his, maybe his idealism or something. It's just, you know, it just strikes me as a very, you know, kid-like thing to do. So yeah, I enjoyed that. What else? I'm really tired. I really didn't feel like recording this. I was in the mood for an episode of Farscape, but I was not in the mood to record one of these. I think that's it. Oh yeah, one thing that I noticed this time around, and that I've never noticed before, is the potential similarities between certain aspects of this episode and Event Horizon. Event Horizon is a sci-fi horror movie in which these people travel through a wormhole and, well, there's a chip that traveled through a wormhole. It's been gone for years and then it suddenly pops up. And so a rescue mission is sent out to investigate what happened to the ship and where it's been for all these years, you know, because it was using experimental wormhole technology. Well, what you kind of figure out is that the ship has been to, like, hell, you know. And so there's some kind of evil presence that's still on the ship. So it's like a sci-fi space ghost story. Really jacked up movie. But, you know, one of the characters in that movie begins to start doing things kind of on behalf of the ship, carrying out the evil wishes of the ship. And their body is also just becoming mutilated. Kind of, I think, through like self-mutilation. And so there was, you know, with what was going on with Krace for the first time, you know, reminded me of that movie. And it is a little disturbing, you know, when, like, he starts freaking out and suddenly he starts ripping his shirt off. And you're watching this, you're like, oh, what? No, what is this? And then you see all these lesions on his body and it's just like, oh, what the crap is happening? So, and you know, just prior to that, he'd been kind of, he was being controlled by Talon, you know. So definitely this time around, I don't know if Ben Browder, you know, was inspired by that movie at all, which would have come out, you know, a handful of years before this episode aired. Anyway, but I thought that was kind of interesting. All right, I think that's it for this time. Next time will be Losing Time.